Blog Talk Radio.
Today, after 2 years of negotiations, the United States, together with our international partners, has achieved something that decades of animosity has not: a comprehensive long-term deal with Iran that will prevent it from obtaining a nuclear weapon. This deal demonstrates that American diplomacy can bring about real and meaningful change, change that makes our country and the world safer and more secure.
Good Friday morning, everyone. You are listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble, your host. Thank you, one and all, for hanging out with me today. That, of course, was President Obama on Wednesday, I believe, announcing the that a nuclear deal with Iran had been reached. And we are going to talk about that. We are going to talk about tons of other stuff. We got lots of presidential politics going on this week. But, of course, front and center right now, first and foremost today, in light of yesterday, the biggest thing that we've got to talk about today is the horrific attack on the military recruitment centers in Chattanooga, Tennessee yesterday by what appears by all accounts to be a terrorist, possibly domestic terrorist, but a terrorist nonetheless. And talk about a domestic terrorist. When I say that, it's not in the vein of domestic terrorism that you would have a Timothy McVeigh. This is a new kind of domestic terrorism. It's not militia guys. It's not what the media likes to call extremist right wing domestic terrorism. It's a new kind of terrorism. It is primarily young men who maybe are born in Middle Eastern countries that support terrorism, and they come here at a very young age with their parents and live here and grow up in this country and grow up in our society and our culture, but yet they become radicalized by whether it's ISIS, whether it's Al-Qaeda offshoots. They become radicalized by other Muslim extremists, whether it's, you know, they're sitting right here in the United States of America in their basement, but they're on the internet, they're going online and they're talking to people from all over the world, and they're becoming radicalized. And that looks like maybe what has gone on here. We're gonna spend some time on this one because it's obviously a huge story, and there's so many layers to it and so many levels to it. But, you know, we can talk about terrorism, we can talk about homeland security, we can talk about, I'm sure that the subject of men and women, military men and women in recruitment centers such as this, not being able to arm themselves and defend themselves. I also think that at some point this is going to come back around to gun control. So there's a lot of different things that you can talk about here in a lot of different layers. Like I said, TGIF, thank God it is Friday. The weekend is upon us. And it is going to be a hot one here in the loo this week, people. Put your swim trunks on and head for the nearest pool because it's going to be a scorcher. It's going to be a hot one. But we will persevere. We will weather through it all. And, of course, you can go to the chat room. The chat room is open. And you can call in here. The number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620, and you can talk to me. And let me know what you think about what happened yesterday. Like I said, we're going to talk about the Iran deal. Let me know what you think about that. What do you think about the president's reaction yesterday to this horrific shooting? You know, whatever it is, whatever you want to talk about. But, again, this for those of you who might be under a rock, that this took place yesterday in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and there were actually two separate crime scenes here. There was a recruitment center, I believe it was a Marine Navy recruitment center, and then just a short distance away, there was another armed forces recruiting center, a National Guard office and things like that. And there are right now, as of today, there was one female sailor at the Navy Recruitment Center who was in surgery as of last night. I've yet to find anything yet about her condition as of today. There was a policeman shot in the ankle. There were several people who were injured. But the gist of this is that we have four Marines who were shot dead. Four Marines who have given their lives in service to this country. And at least one of them is an Iraq War vet. He was also a Purple Heart recipient. He is Gunnery Sergeant Thomas Sullivan from Massachusetts. And, Sergeant Sullivan went to Iraq and risked his life and managed to make it out in one piece and came home and was gunned down in a recruitment center like this. And the gunman is, of course, dead. It is unclear, I believe, at this point, whether he was shot by police or he took his own life. He has been identified as 24-year-old Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz of Hickson, Tennessee, which is just a few miles outside of Chattanooga. He was born in Kuwait, and it is also unclear at this point, as of yesterday evening, whether or not he is or is not a U.S. citizen. And he decided to celebrate the end of Ramadan, which is today, which we all know is a very holy month in the Muslim faith, in Islam. And we also know that for quite a while now that ISIS has been encouraging a lot of what they're calling these lone wolf attackers, and they've been especially encouraging it during the month of Ramadan. And this investigation is very new. I don't know yet if we know, you know, the authorities are still, you know, digging into things like his computer hard drive and you know, any kind of contacts and, you know, things of that nature, websites that he frequented. That's just now beginning. It's just now getting underway. So we have yet to find out who, if any, his accomplices were, and how did he get to this point? How did he get to this mindset? We do know that he was a blogger, and there were several, at least two postings prior to this shooting that might have given some indication as to what he wanted to do, as to what his idea was right here. His father, at one point several years ago, was on a terror watch list, and to my knowledge, from everything that I have seen, nothing really came of that. And it says, this is from a New York Times report, citing unnamed law enforcement officials, reported that his father had been under investigation several years ago over possible ties to a foreign terrorist organization and had been on a terrorist watch list, but he had since been removed from that list, and there was no information on the son here, Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz. And he also was not on any sort of FBI watch list. He really was not on the FBI's radar. And, you know, it always seems like, and the other thing with this, too, is that the media spoke with a lot of people who knew him yesterday. I believe they spoke with a high school wrestling coach, maybe some former classmates, some former college friends and classmates, You know, it's the same story all the time. You always get, oh, he was such a nice guy. He was great. He was fun. He was fun to be around. You know, you get the same thing all the time, and you get how shocked people are when they realize that these guys are kind of, in a sense, living a double life. And there is one persona that they present to the world as just, you know, your average guy. And then there's the other side of them, that darker side, that is becoming radicalized and is frequenting these jihadi websites and things of that nature. And, you know, so they're good actors, it appears, for one. These guys are very good actors, and they're very good at fooling people. And so my question kind of is that, you know, it's like I said, it seems like that these guys are never on the FBI's radar. So my question to the FBI, I'm not trying to say that they're not doing a good job. There have been, according to FBI Director James Comey, who was testifying on Capitol Hill this week, that there have been hundreds of these kinds of attacks that have been thwarted. And in his testimony, he basically said, look, we can't sustain this. We can't keep this up. I can't keep this up. There's becoming too many to account for. And so I think that my question to the FBI would be, who exactly are you guys watching? Because it never seems like that these guys are on your radar list. And so, you know, there may be some procedural things or something of that nature that needs to be looked at on the part of the FBI. How are they determining, I guess, who they're watching and who they're not watching? And the latest I have as of today on this horrific story is that authorities, and I'm going to assume again the FBI, is that they are investigating trips that were taken by Mohammed Youssef Abdulaziz. They are investigating trips that he, at least one trip that he took to Jordan, and another possible trip to Yemen. And maybe not quite so much Jordan, but Yemen is I think it's rapidly becoming a training center, a center for radicalization of these guys. And so that could be something that is rather significant if they find out anything about these trips, if in fact these trips were taken, and if so, you know, what exactly went on, who did he contact, who was he in communication with, that kind of thing. And one of the interesting things here is that during the news conference yesterday after this incident, the mayor of Chattanooga spoke, the governor of Tennessee spoke, but there was also, forgive me, I can't remember his title. I believe that he is the district attorney for Eastern Tennessee. I could be wrong, but I believe that is his title. This is a man by the name of, it's right here in front of me, Bill Killian. He is the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Tennessee. Said yesterday during this yesterday afternoon during this news conference that this was in fact being investigated as an act of domestic terrorism. And again, like I said, we're getting to the point where when you say the phrase domestic terrorism, you're kind of talking about two different strains at this point. You have the traditional militia, survivalist right wing, what the media likes to call extreme right wing. Funny, I never hear them use the phrase extreme left wing. Things that make you go But you know, your Timothy McVeigh type anti-government guys, and then you have guys like Mohammed Youssef Abdulaziz, who maybe was born someplace like Kuwait, but came here as a child with his parents. And while they grew up here, they became westernized as they grew up and lived in our society and lived in our culture. They somehow revert back to maybe revert back is a wrong way, but they somehow they come in contact with these radical Muslim groups and they become brainwashed. And one of the reasons also, I believe yesterday, this is not in my Newsmax report here, but in a different report, that the only sort of run-ins that this kid had with the law was that back in April he had gotten a DUI, which for someone who claims to be a devout Muslim, you know, a lot of us may find that a little bit odd, but that was the only thing. And I believe I heard someone, a reporter last night, say that in Tennessee, a DUI is a misdemeanor. So that really would not be anything to get the attention of the FBI or any other law enforcement entity, you know, over something like that. But this, like I said, this what I was going to say before I got distracted here is that this U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Tennessee, Bill Killian, said that this is being investigated as a act of domestic terrorism. According to Pam Geller's website, Atlas Shrugged, this is the same guy, Department of Justice official, who at one time vowed to criminalize social postings on Facebook and Twitter if they were critical of Islam. So I know that myself and a lot of other people were going to see what else we can find about this and make sure that we can bring that information to you, because if that is in fact the case, I don't know that this guy has any business being on this case. And you know, like I said, this is going to it's going to open up a whole lot of other arguments, like why are military personnel, people who are extremely well trained in the use of firearms, why are these people not being allowed to arm themselves in these recruitment centers to be able to defend themselves? Because we know, beyond the shadow of a doubt, we know from solid information that these guys are being encouraged to attack these places. And I believe this law was put in place. What I saw about it yesterday was that this law, this ordinance, whatever you want to call it, was put in place back in 1993 by the Clinton administration. And it's obviously an obsolete, outdated law at this point, because like I just said, we know that these places are being attacked, and ISIS groups have specifically said to their lone wolf guys, to the people that they are encouraging to carry out these attacks, that they should target these kind of places. And traditionally, these kind of places, these recruitment centers, were called soft targets. Well, maybe we need to look at that in another way as well. Maybe we need to look at that as that they're no longer soft targets if terrorists are being encouraged to target these recruitment centers, that it seems to me that that's a pretty hard target. And so again, I think hopefully that this law about gun-free zones, you know, and you know what, really not just these recruitment centers, which is ridiculous anyway, but gun-free zones in general, because we know not just from incidents like this, but we know from the Sandy Hook shooting, we know from the movie theater shooting in Colorado, we know that people like this who are going to carry out these acts of terrorism, and that's what they are, let's call them what they are. We know that these people are looking for someplace with a big sign on it, with a gun, with a big red circle through it that says gun-free zone, for because they know that no one is going to be armed and be able to fight back and defend themselves. And so I think that this definitely has to be looked at. It's something that's going to have to be looked at. And, you know, I think the whole issue of gun control in general is going to come up. And I think that kind of surprising to me that the president really has not brought that up yet. He doesn't waste any time scolding us about the evils of everyone being armed. But, you know, this is a brand new investigation, and over the weekend I'm sure we are going to hear a lot more about this. We're going to learn a lot more about this young man who was the shooter, and we're going to learn a lot more about his activities, and we're going to learn about, hopefully we're going to learn about his trips overseas, and just exactly who he talked to while he was there. I'm going to take a really quick break. Thanks, everybody, for chilling out with me on this Friday, TGIF. We got a lot more to get to, so stay right where you are. Don't go away. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I will be right back.
I love those times so well. You know I wouldn't change a thing. That's how I learned to sing. That's what I know so well. Yes, I know how to party, but I know how to tell it like it is. I wanna thank you for the good times and the lessons that I
Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with me on this fabulous steamy Friday here in St. Louis. Like I said, get your swim trunks and Head for the nearest body of water, people. It's going to be the only thing that helps, I believe. That and, I don't know, maybe just staying inside and hanging out and listening to the Conservative Cauldron. But we've got a lot to get to today. We are, of course, talking about the terrible, horrific shooting in Chattanooga, Tennessee yesterday of four Marines and the injuring of others, law enforcement officials and some other military personnel at two military recruitment centers in Chattanooga, Tennessee yesterday. And I believe we are going to find out a lot more about the shooter and his activities, be it online or anywhere else. Apparently he took some trips to the Middle East prior to this attack. And we're going to be doing a lot more talking about this and finding out about a lot more about this young man's activities. But, of course, this week also we had this, this deal from hell with the Iranians. I've heard many people call it making a deal with the devil, and I think that's exactly what it is. There was dancing in the streets of Tehran this week. And if you were listening at the top of the show, I played the announcement of the president making the announcement of this deal, and he's all giddy and he's all smiles about it. But I think maybe he and you know a few of his toadies around him are about the only people other than the Iranians who are smiling about this because. It does a lot of things, and none of them are good. And basically what it does, it takes one of the biggest threats to the United States, to Israel, and to other nations in the region. Iran is their biggest threat, and you've given them license, you know, maybe not right now today, but within the next 10 years, you've given them license to essentially collect enough material to, when the time comes, when all of this everything in this deal sunsets, and it becomes time for them to build a nuclear bomb, and it gives them time to collect all the materials and to enrich uranium and do all the things that you do when you are building nuclear bombs, and basically, what we've given them is a time frame in which to do this. And I think one of the biggest things about this is that you have basically, what you've done is given a death sentence to Israel. And we're going to hear from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu here in a minute. But I think that just about anybody with any sense here, you know, you're not dealing with a nation of people who want to, I don't think that really want to be part of the world community. And because of the naivete of President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry, that this is because of that level of naivete, they don't understand this. I don't believe that President Obama understands the nature of this threat. I don't believe that he understands that the annihilation of Israel is not up for negotiation for these people, that they're going to keep going and keep going and keep going until they do that. And once they've done that, all bets are off for the United States. And when Iran builds the weapons that they want to build because of this deal, they're going to be weapons that can reach the United States. And that's not at issue. And they are the largest sponsor in the middle of terrorism in the Middle East. And there's no incentive here. There's no requirement here for the Iranians to adjust their behavior in any way. And the United States will not be allowed to come in and inspect any of their nuclear sites. There is going to be a 24-day waiting period. If it is deemed that any one of these sites needs to be inspected, there's this big a big chain of command, a big food chain that needs to be gone down through the United Nations, through the IAEA, through all of these organizations before you can even get anyone, and it's not going to be Americans. We're not going to be doing that. Before you can get anybody in to inspect these sites. And the biggest question I've heard that anybody ask here is, what are we getting out of this? What is the United States getting out of this? And the short answer to that is nothing, because not only do you have the United States here, what also has essentially gone on here is that you have ensured an arms race is going to take place in the Middle East. And that's probably the last place on Earth that you want a nuclear arms race to take place, is in the Middle East, because as soon as it is learned that the Iranians are at some point down the line within the next 10 years going to get nukes, the Arabs are going to get nukes, every country in that region is going to decide for their own protection that they need to have nukes. And I also think, too, that one of the most good things about this deal is that there was nothing said about the four prisoners being held captive in Iran right now. In addition to Pastor Saeed Abedini and a U.S. Marine and several others, including a journalist who's been missing there for 7 years, there was no type of negotiation. These were not these the release of these prisoners was not even part of the negotiation. And which brings me to a very, very interesting little bit of sound here. During the announcement of this deal the other day by the president, Major Garrett of CBS News and formerly of Fox News, which is probably the one thing which gets under Obama's skin, asked him about these prisoners. Let's take a listen.
Direct relationship. Okay. Major Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. President. As you well know, there are four Americans in Iran, three held on trumped-up charges, according to your administration, and one whereabouts unknown. Can you tell the country, sir, why you are content with all the fanfare around this deal to leave the conscience of this nation and the strength of this nation unaccounted for in relation to these four Americans? And last week, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said under no circumstances should there be any relief for Iran in terms of ballistic missiles or conventional weapons. It is perceived that was a last-minute capitulation in these negotiations. Many in the Pentagon feel you've left the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff hung out to dry. Could you comment?
I got to give you credit, Major, for how you craft those questions. For the notion that I'm content as I celebrate with American citizens languishing in Iranian jails? Major, that's nonsense. And you should know better. I've met with the families of some of those folks. Nobody's content. And our diplomats and our teams are working diligently to try to get them out. Now, if the question is why we did not tie the negotiations to their release, think about the logic that creates. Suddenly Iran realizes, you know what, maybe we can get additional concessions out of the Americans by holding these individuals. Makes it much more difficult for us to walk away if Iran somehow thinks that a nuclear deal is dependent in some fashion on the nuclear deal. And by the way, if we had walked away from the nuclear deal, we'd still be pushing them just as hard to get these folks out. That's why those issues are not connected. But we are working every single day to try to get them out and won't stop until they're up and rejoined with their families. With respect to...
First of all, you shouldn't be trying to get them out. You should be demanding that they be out. You should be demanding that they be back on American soil within 48 hours or there are some consequences. And stand by those consequences. Stand behind that line in the sand. And this president just refuses to do so. And, you know, whether it's this deal, whether it's the shooting yesterday, again, we have a president, we have an administration who refuses to say the phrase radical Islamic terrorism. For whatever reason, you know, we all have our suspicions and we all have our ideas about maybe why he just cannot get the phrase radical Islamic terrorism out of his mouth. You know, like I said, there are many different ideas on that. But, you know, this one bite, it seems to me, it tells you everything that you need to know about Barack Obama, because as soon as he doesn't get his way, as soon as he comes across someone who disagrees with him and then who's going to question him, he becomes this foot stompy little 5-year-old. And I think what he really wanted to say to Major Garrett is, look here, you idiot. What you don't understand is blah, 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 you know, and he would go into his talking. You know, it astounds him, I think, that somebody would actually disagree with him. And I find that amusing and, you know, pretty irritating too. But it's just, you know, if you just listen to that soundbite, it tells you everything that you need to know about Barack Obama. And, right now, this deal actually is not a done deal. The deal will go to the Senate for a 60-day review period, and there are plenty of people in the Senate, Democrats included, who want no part of this. And they will. It's going to be interesting to see which way it goes, and see who comes out on top, because. Also, during this, I don't know if it was during this announcement the other day, it might have been, forgive me, I don't remember exactly when it was, it might have been later on that day or in another statement by the president, that he has kind of, in so many words, he has kind of warned Congress so much, a veiled, you better pass this or else kind of thing. And I think myself and anybody else, we can only hope that, you know, since the election of Republicans to the Senate and since Republicans took over the Senate, and there has not been a lot of this is a family show and it's late morning. There has not been a lot of testicular fortitude, shall we say, among Republicans in the Senate. And I think that we can only hope at this point that maybe somebody somewhere will find a pair and give a really healthy pushback on this deal, because it is so not good for a variety of reasons. And again, what do we get out of it? What does the United States get out of it? And not only have we negotiated away all of our influence on whether or not rogue nations like Iran can acquire nuclear weapons, we've also negotiated any leverage that we have for the release of these prisoners. And it really is mind-boggling. And like I said, there is, like I said earlier, and others have said it as well, that this is kind of tantamount to a death sentence for Israel. But, you know, I think that we all know enough about Benjamin Netanyahu that he's not going to take this lying down, and he's going to do what he needs to do for the best interests of his nation. And here is his reaction to this deal.
The entire world is now under assault by militant Islam, the militant Shiites led by Iran, the militant Sunnis led by Daesh, ISIS. We know we have to defend our lives, but also our values, and those values we hold dear, as you do. That's why we hold our friendship dear. I'll have more to say later today about the impending Iran deal, but our concern, of course, is that the militant Islamic State of Iran is going to receive a sure path to nuclear weapons. Many of the restrictions that were supposed to prevent it from getting there will be lifted. And in addition, Iran will get a jackpot of cash bonanza of hundreds of billions of dollars, which will enable it to continue to pursue its aggression and terror in the region and in the world. This is a bad mistake of historic proportions. I think we will continue to have the job of defending our way of life, our freedoms, and our security.
That, of course, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his reaction to this nuclear deal with Iran this week that was negotiated by the Obama administration. And, you know, I think you have to... You have to kind of feel, I don't know how other way to put it, you have to kind of feel for a guy like Benjamin Netanyahu, because Israel has been so, and with good reason, traditionally they have always known that America, that the United States, has its back, and we really don't right now. I mean, it's patently, painfully obvious that we do not at this time. And I think that Prime Minister Netanyahu knows that he is kind of on his own at this point, that the United States is not going to do a whole lot in order to assist Israel in sending off any nuclear attacks, at least right now. If they were going to do it today, that they would not get a lot of help from the United States. And it's this whole deal is just, I think it also should be very clear to a lot of American Jews. And I heard radio talk show host Mark Levin say something to this effect this week, that it should be also painfully obvious to any American Jews that Barack Obama is no friend to Israel. And the fact that they would continue to vote for a man like him, not just him, he's not going to be on another ballot, but if they cast a vote for Hillary Clinton, it's going to be the same thing as casting a third vote for Barack Obama, because she has been a big influence and a big part in a lot of these foreign policy decisions. And I've said it many times, a lot of people have said it many times, that, you know, I don't know, and I'm speaking for myself right now, I don't know how you sit in the church of a man like Jeremiah Wright for 20 years and listen to him rant and rave and talk about those Jews did this and those Jews did that, and the things that he says, that the anti-Semitic things that he says. How you sit in the church of a man like that for 20 years and some of that not rub off on you. I don't understand it either, why Barack Obama or his administration or any Democrats anymore for that matter would have the support of any American Jews. I don't understand it. And because it's obvious to everyone else that he is no friend to Israel. But, again, there is a 60-day period in which the Senate has to review this deal. And, gee, I don't know, here's a thought. Read it, and we'll see what happens. We will see. But it's kind of a sad day. It was kind of a sad day for America, a sad day for Israel. And anytime there is dancing in the streets of Tehran, it probably means that it's a sad day for the United States. And I'm going to take another quick break. I will be right back. We've still got lots to get to, so stay right where you are. You are listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for hanging out with me today. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I'm Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with me today. TGIF. We are talking a lot of things here today. It's been a busy week. We've had, of course, the horrible shooting yesterday in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We've got the deal from hell, the nuclear deal with Iran this week that is not going to mean anything very good either for the United States or for Israel or for anybody else, really, for that matter. And we can only hope that there is enough people in the Senate that will be able to block this deal. And I think what will be kind of amusing is that if, in fact, they do, let's speak hypothetically for a minute, and then we got to move on. But let's say just for a minute that this deal does get blocked, and it is not being called a treaty for a reason, because if it is called a treaty, that does mean, according to the Constitution, that the Senate does have to vote on it. So they are not calling it a treaty on purpose. But it will be interesting to see that if this does get, if this does get pushback from the Senate, that it'll be really interesting and amusing, I think, to me at least, the temper tantrum that the president is going to throw, because make no mistake about it, we know that he does not like to be questioned and he does not like to be criticized. And if this in fact happens, that's what that is, and he's going to become a foot-stompy little five-year-old again when he does, like he always does when he doesn't get his way. But also this week we have, this is from Breitbart, there is, President Obama wrote, took the time to write personally letters to 46 people who are serving time for nonviolent drug offenses, and he is commuting their sentences. And, you know, that is, you can say what you want about Tory drug sentencing and things like that, and perhaps that is, it's another argument for another day, it's part of another show. But what is interesting about this is that while he took the time to personally write 46 letters to these people informing them that their nonviolent drug offense convictions were going to be commuted, he has yet to contact the family of Catherine Steinle. That, you know, of course, is Catherine Steinle is the woman who was murdered in San Francisco roughly 2 weeks ago now by an illegal alien who had been not only been deported 5 times, but he also had seven felony convictions on his record. So I think that's another place where we can see where the priorities of this president and his administration lie, in that it is much more important to write letters of informing people of their drug offenses being commuted, but you really don't have time to make a phone call to the Steinle family, maybe offering some condolences to them, because that might make it look like that you are saying something bad about illegal immigrants, because, well, you know, that's, again, another discussion for another day. A big part of the Democrat Party voting base, Hispanics, and, of course, Democrats believe that Hispanics are, you know, they only vote on one issue, and that is illegal immigration. But the other thing that was interesting about this is that during a press briefing earlier this week, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson was asked by a reporter if the president had indeed spoken as yet to the Steinle family. And his response was pretty telling, pretty interesting. He basically had no clue who this woman was, had no clue about the story, had no clue about who Catherine Steinle was, just basically had no clue. And that is also very tells you what you need to know about this president and about this administration and where their priorities lie. Very quickly here, before we have to wrap things up, we have a little presidential politics. Of course, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker jumped into the presidential race this week and announced his candidacy for president of the United States. And, you know, a couple things about Scott Walker. He is, you know, he comes off as a average Joe six-pack, you know, regular, ordinary, Midwestern kind of guy. And that's good. I think that is, it's relatable to people. And I like him personally. I think he's smart. I think he's articulate. But the thing about him is that he has had 3 election victories in the last 4 years. And one of those, of course, including was a very vitriolic, very hostile recall election. And the left threw their union buddies, they threw everything that they could possibly throw at him. They threatened his family, they threatened his wife, threatened his children, threw everything at him that they could, and he still beat them. and he beat them in a really, really blue state like Wisconsin. So my thing with Scott Walker is that I don't think that you can discount him. You need to pay a little bit of attention to him because he obviously has a formula for beating the left. He's done it 3 times in 4 years. So there's obviously something there that needs to be looked at. And I think that, you know, don't discount him. Don't take him for granted. He has a very experienced campaign team, and he's starting in the race with a very large donor list, a lot of them from his 3 statewide campaigns, and he has a lot of out-of-state contributors as well that will help him really build a national network of donors. Very quickly, a new Fox News poll here puts Donald Trump, believe it or not, ahead of Jeb Bush and several other people. This was a poll that was taken from July 13th through the 15th, 1,019 registered voters. And Trump leads all the presidential candidates at 18%, an increase of 7 points since last month and 15 points since March. He is ahead of Jeb Bush, who I believe is at 15% here. Jeb Bush actually is in third place. Scott Walker comes in behind Donald Trump. And this kind of goes in order here. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul in fourth place with 8%. Marco Rubio with 7%. Ben Carson with 6%. Texas Senator Ted Cruz at 4%. Governor Mike Huckabee at 4%. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie at 3%. Ohio Governor John Kasich and former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, both with 2% each. And this is not the only poll that Trump is polling first in. He is in a Suffolk University USA Today poll, puts Trump in first place with 17% compared to 14% for Jeb Bush. And an Economist/YouGov poll released last week, Trump gets 15% compared to 11% for Bush. So, and this is all going on while Hillary's poll numbers are dropping among Democrats. And I'm running out of time here, so we will talk a lot more about Donald Trump in the future and why he is resonating so much with people. But very quickly, before I get out of here, you can now order a Crunchwrap Supreme and get it delivered directly to your door. That's right, people. Oh, this is so bad for people like me. So good, but so bad. Taco Bell is the latest fast food chain to enter the delivery market with the announcement of its partnership with Palo Alto-based delivery service DoorDash. The new delivery service will be available in Taco Bell locations in over 90 cities and more than 200 restaurants in California and Texas. Some of them include Los Angeles, Orange County, the San Francisco Bay Area, and Dallas. Delivery costs $3.99, is typically only available from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m., and will take around 38 minutes total, according to Bloomberg. Customers can order their food through the DoorDash website and its iOS and Android platforms. Delivery is yet another example of how we're using technology and innovation to respond to customers' wants and needs, further evolving the Taco Bell experience for customers, said Taco Bell CEO Brian Nichol in a press release. So, lesson of the day, people. You can now get your Taco Bell on, and you don't even have to leave your house. It's completely awesome. Anyway, I don't have much time left. Thank you very much, everybody, for hanging out with me today. ConservativeCauldron.blogspot.com, Facebook.com/Twitter, TheBlackSphere.net, and on Twitter at PatriotWitch. Everybody have a great weekend. I will see you next time. Stand up.